As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Soccer Show and our latest batch of listener questions. Today we're asking where Xavi ranks on the legendary player turned coach spectrum. We're asking who is the greatest non-DP in MLS history. And we're talking about the players we just don't like. My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me to answer these questions and many, many more. His first name's Taylor. His second name's Rockwell. It's Taylor Rockwell.
Hello, you got both correct, and I hope everyone else gets the non-DP question correct, because there is one answer and one answer only, and if you don't say it, then we're fighting.
And he's got great hair, doesn't he, Taylor?
That he does, my friend. Okay, all same right. Page. Good stuff, Joe.
Good, excellent. Good. All right, looking forward to that. Joe Lowry, hello, how are you?
I'm even better now that Graham is squirming ahead of that MLS DP question, Ryan. Things are great over here.
Excellent. I think that question depends on Inter Miami conversations and who is a DP or not, frankly, but Graham Rosen, how are you?
Yeah, I am not bad, Ryan Bailey. I mean, Jordi Alba's hair is okay. I wouldn't say he's got great hair.
There we go. But, Graham's on the same wavelength.
I'm also now, it also now occurs to me that Joe could be talking about one of two people. And I know which one I'm talking about with great hair, but I feel like he might be talking about somebody else. We're going to get to it.
We're talking about the same person, Taylor, but the other one is also on my list. Okay. We can leave this discussion for
later. This is where we learn a lot about Joe's taste in haircuts when he says Clint Mathis is top of his list.
Graham, get out of my notes, man. I did not send you that doc.
Excellent stuff. Patreon.com/Total Soccer Show if you'd like to support Total Soccer Show. Thank you very much to everybody who does so already. We have bonus videos. Bonus podcasts are on there. Also, greatest of all, access to the Discord, where, among other things, we talk about my childhood having a pond. It's become a whole thing for some reason. I don't know why, but here we are. This is 2024. All right.
The memes just keep on coming. Now we've got an adapted David and Victoria working class discussion.
Tell the truth.
Tell
be
the
honest.
Truth. So many koi.
How many koi?
Yeah, that was good. That made me laugh.
I think my favorite thing is how good. Much Ryan isn't enjoying this.
I have some of my childhood staff read me the memes in the evenings occasionally. Patreon.com/Total Soccer Zone to join the fun.
You
Discord.
Called them by their first name and they called you sir, I'm assuming.
What?
Or
why
Mr.
Would
Bailey.
I know their first names?
Lord Bailey, whatever you prefer. You didn't know their first name.
He doesn't talk to them.
Yeah.
No eye contact, no names, Sailor. That's how we roll. Okay, let's get to the listener questions. So we TotalSoccerShow.com/questions if you would like to submit, or do so in the Discord as well. Once again, patreon.com/TotalSoccerShow to support us there. Jesse Frankel has been in touch and says, Kingsley Coman has never lost the league, while Harry Kane has never won the league. Which streak breaks first this season with Bayern Munich? I suppose, Taylor, this question is, will Bayer Leverkusen win the Bundesliga?
And I was leaning away from my mic in hopes that you wouldn't call on me first. I don't know, is my answer. I really don't. I flip-flopped on this like 40 times. I landed on, I think Harry Kane ends up winning it. That is where I went. I hope I am wrong. I would love to see somebody else win it. I would love Xabi Alonso and Bayer Leverkusen to go the distance. Maybe I'm just weighing too heavily on the draw from this past weekend. But Bayern themselves haven't gotten a loss recently, but it does feel like we could see Bayern sort of like just turn it on as we've seen them do in the Rookrunda and just grind out the results. I hope I am incorrect, but if push comes to shove, I guess I will back history and say that Harry Kane will win the Bundesliga this season.
It depends what aspect of history you're backing, Harry Kane's history or Bayern's, Taylor.
Very true. I guess I'll back the other 10 players then. How about that?
Very well. That'll be disappointing, Taylor, for Bayer Leverkusen.
It really will
fans.
Be. And it feels lame to say that, but I think that that's maybe it's like a little attempt at a reverse jinx, and I hope that I'm wrong. Yeah. But maybe it's also a threat to Xavi Alonso. Like, don't go to Liverpool, and then we can still be friends again.
There you go. Well, that's going to be the bitter pill, isn't it? By the way, we've won the league, and your manager's leaving is.
Oh.
At least
that happens every season, though, in the Bundesliga to every other team.
Exactly. I was going to say, at least it's not Bayern taking him this time. Like, that's a positive. They're not just taking their also ran's best player, best coach, whatever it is. At least somebody else would be taking him this time.
All right. Graham, can we congratulate Kingsley Coman on selecting teams who absolutely dominate in their respective leagues to have won the league every year so far?
So this is the sort of thing I should have researched before we started recording. His record goes back to Juventus then as well? Is that correct? Or is it just
PSG
Bayern?
Too, right?
PSG, right, yeah. Okay. So yeah, just select the dominant teams in each league and you'll be good. I hope the Harry Kane streak continues, not because I have an ill feeling towards Harry Kane, but just, you know, funny. There was a situation where earlier in the season when Spurs were top of the table, and please, this would be the funniest thing that has ever happened in football, if he moves to Bayern Munich to win a title and Spurs win the title as soon as he leaves. That doesn't look likely at all now, but to be sincere, yeah, I think Bayern Munich win the title. Unfortunately, just for the sake of variety, I'd like Bayer Leverkusen to do it. They play each other on February 10th.
Yep.
So it's not that far away. So circle that one in the calendar. I think if Leverkusen were to be more than 3 points ahead after that match, I might start to change my mind at that point. But everyone's talking about Harry Kane breaking his trophy duck. What about Eric Dier's trophy duck? He's got the accent. All he needs now is the trophy to complete the set.
Graham,
Is that the set?
Those two things.
Accent, trophy.
Got it. Thanks.
I'm lacking the trophy. I've got a Scottish accent, no trophy.
It really will be that game on the 10th that I think is hugely telling here. I remember we did an Eredivisie title prediction in a listener questions episode last year. And it was like right before a pivotal game and we all went one way and that game went the other and then we all ended up being wrong. I've got a sinking suspicion that that's going to happen this time around as well. And Leverkusen are going to be... You know, Graham, you said the number at 5. They could be 5 points up or you know, even more than that, depending on what happens this weekend. So it's not a sure thing, and that game on the 10th will really sway the odds. I went in and looked at what the odds makers had to say about this because my gut said Bayern Munich, even though they are 2 points back right now. And clearly everybody else's gut said Bayern Munich, and the betting odds would agree with us. So the bookmaker I checked gave Bayern a 62.3% chance to win the title. Leverkusen were down in the 40s. Now, there's a hold factored in there, so it's not quite that high for both of those teams, but Bayern probably have a 15, 17, 20% edge on Bayer Leverkusen in this title race, which feels about right. I don't think any of us would be surprised if Bayer Leverkusen won this whole thing. On week one of the season, we would have been surprised. Now, I don't think we would be. But also, none of us would be surprised if Bayern Munich won this whole thing. We'd probably be less surprised if that happens. So I do give the edge to Bayern Munich. I think Harry Kane's streak will be broken, which is a great thing for him and also a great thing for Kingsley Coman. So there's good things here for Bayern Munich coming. I think the other down note for Bayer Leverkusen that we kind of touched on is maybe them getting passed over in the title race, which I think all of us hope doesn't happen, but expect to happen in one way or another. Then Xabi Alonso goes to Liverpool, which feels very, very possible. And then they start getting picked apart. Right, we talked about this with Napoli last year, and it didn't really happen in a weird way with Napoli. Kvaradona still starting for them. Victor Osimhen, it seems like he is going to be gone by the end of the season, but he has still played out this year, even though the year has not gone for Napoli how they hoped it would have after they lifted the title last season. I am concerned that Bayer Leverkusen will get slowly dismantled. Florian Wirtz has been a hot prospect for quite some time now. He has interest from other clubs. You look at some of the members of the back line as well. Kasunu is a super talented player. Like, there are young stars in this team that I'm afraid, including Xabi Alonso, that I'm afraid won't be around for another bite of the apple.
Yeah. You only get one shot, as Eminem said in a song once, Joe, after all. There is a scenario where both these streaks get broken in the next two seasons, though, isn't there, Joe? Like, come on, could lose the league this season. And surely Harry Kane's streak as a Bayern Munich player will end at least in the next couple seasons.
Yeah, yeah. I think, Ryan, that's a pretty safe bet to at least have the Kane one happen in the next 2 years. I don't think anybody could imagine Bayern losing back-to-back titles in the Bundesliga at this point. So if they are not fortunate enough to get it over the line this year, I mean, they'll still be massive favorites when next season kicks off.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Jesse, for your question. We go now to Guy Yedwab, who says, where does Xavi rank so far on the spectrum of recently retired legendary players who now coach on a scale of Pirlo to Zidane?
Spicy.
It's a spicy. I love that scale right there. Yeah. Who is close to him on the spectrum? Joe, I would suggest he's closer to Pirlo than Zidane.
I love this. I love this so much. It's impossible, but I love it.
Yeah.
First of all, I mean specifically saying who's close to him on the spectrum can just go really different ways depending on what we're talking about. But in this case, it's still a weird question. Let's go.
Yeah, and also harsh, slightly harsh on Pirlo, not because he's a good manager, but because this is a world where Frank Lampard exists.
Ooh,
and
or
surely
Steven
he's bottom of the scale.
Come
or
on.
Steven Gerrard, yeah. Yeah.
Or Wayne Rooney.
Yeah, it's not a great list. I think, Ryan, you were tossing to me. I'm just going to come in and say it's not a great list of names. Yeah. What I will say for Pirlo is he was sort of thrust into that job with Juventus, right? Mauricio Sarri is axed, and Pirlo, sort of in the process of moving through the very early stages of his coaching career, was in the Juve, you know, youth system, I believe, and ends up leading the first team, and they end up in the Champions League spots, and that he's done in one season, and now he's in the lower divisions in Italy. Like, coaching and being a successful coach, you need to be in a situation where two things happen. You need to have a lot of the best players in your competition, and you need to have the trust of your higher up so that you don't get fired before you can do stuff. There are other things you need to be a great coach, but it's really hard to be around long enough in any job if you don't have those two things as a baseline. And the vast majority of these managers have not had those things to the point where it's really hard for me to evaluate who's good at stuff and who's bad at stuff. With that being said, here is an entirely correct, factual, and inarguable list from 1 to 9 of the 9 recent players I could think of off the top of my head that are coaching right now. Number one.
Here we go.
Zidane, not coaching right now. Doesn't matter. Number one. Xabi Alonso, number two. Xavi, number three. Pirlo, number four. I'm sympathetic to Pirlo and he's handsome. Steven Gerrard, number five. Patrick Vieira, number six. Frank Lampard, number seven. Wayne Rooney, number eight. And Daniele De Rossi, number nine. Because it's too early to tell, although maybe he'll lead Roma to glory. That's my top nine. It's inarguable. Someone else can talk now.
I feel like Daniele De Rossi's got a 100% record as a... as a coach, maybe not for his previous club, but for Roma.
Yeah, not
in
for
the
previous
club.
He nearly certainly relegated to the third tier of Italian football.
Okay, let's say Serie A 100% record. Can we?
Nailed
can
we
say
it. That? This guy writes a newsletter.
I largely agree with Joe. I think I have Zidane top. Where would Luis Enrique be in this? Does he count as a legendary player?
I don't think he counts as recently retired. Was Joe even born when Luis Enrique retired from football?
I was born in 1965, Graham. I don't know what you're talking about.
He is the oldest on the list if we include him. The next closest would be Gattuso, who I had on my list at 46.
I think
looks up when Roy Hodgson retired.
Gattuso, I'll let you have Enrique retiring in 2004,
That's fine. So then I would have it as Zidane and then Xavi. And then Xavi Alonso just below Xavi. That's confusing. Just because we don't know how the season plays out. Xavi did win the league. Did, I think, manage a situation that was chaos about as well as anyone could. I think Xavi Alonso probably jumps in by the end of the season. And then I had... yeah, Rooney, Lampard, Gerrard, Pirlo, Ruud van Nistelrooy, who I got excited about until I realized he walked away before PSV got good, and then Gattuso and Vincent Kompany in that list as well.
Oh, Kompany, yeah.
Forgot Vincent that. Kompany, yeah.
I made a face for listeners. I made a face when Taylor had Xavi above Xabi, which is, again, really inconsiderate of these people to be naming their kids so similarly. And that's because, number one, I completely forgot that Barcelona won the title last year because so many things have happened since then. Mm-hmm. I also had Xabi ahead regardless of what happens to Leverkusen this year, even though I take your argument, Taylor, just because I think it's so much harder to win the title or to even be top for any team in the Bundesliga not named Bayern Munich. I think it's harder to do that even than it is to win the title as Barcelona right now with the club in chaos when Real Madrid is the other obstacle. I think the Bundesliga is tougher than that, but I mean, I think your list is good.
I think there's also a chance, to Joe's point, that Xabi Alonso is a better overall manager than Xavi. And I think there's a chance that 10 years from now, there's a chance that Xabi Alonso is top of the list. If things go a certain way, let's say he goes to Liverpool, let's say he wins them a title or they win a Champions League, with everything Zidane has done, if Zidane doesn't take more gigs, I think memory of what he did fades a little bit, probably unfairly. But I think Xabi Alonso is best positioned to be an adaptable manager who can have long-term success.
Graham, if we have Zidane on this spectrum, can we have Thierry Henry?
Yeah, so he was he was on my list. So I'll give you my full list, Joe style, from top to bottom.
Yes.
Zidane, I had Xabi Alonso above Xavi, to be honest, although I take the argument with Xavi, he won a league title. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was next. I'm pretty I'm sympathetic to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He had two good seasons.
He's your Pirlo for me, Graham.
Legend.
Yeah.
The legendary.
I know things fell apart dramatically for Solskjaer, but for two seasons, you know, there was progress. Yeah. Vincent Kompany, Gattuso, Thierry Henry, Pirlo, and then bottom of the list, Frank Lampard.
Wait, where was Xavi on yours?
He was third after Zidane and Xabi Alonso.
So I think we all had the same top three so far, but just different orders, and then everything else basically different after that.
So Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Kompany, Gattuso,
Henry, Pirlo, Lampard.
What? Okay. Why is Henry above any of anybody?
Just because I quite like Thierry Henry, there it and I don't is. Like okay. Frank Lampard.
He has had zero success as a manager, correct?
Well, Montreal wasn't outrageously bad. I know, obviously, Wilfred Nancy comes in there and makes him look bad. But if you take his time in charge in isolation, it wasn't horrendous, Joe? This is where you tell me.
Yeah, no, I mean, it wasn't horrendous, but it also wasn't a success either. I think these lists overall, and I love this question from Guy, because I think it's truly impossible to answer, and that makes it a fun thought exercise. This exercise really forces us to think about how difficult it is to evaluate coaches, right? Like finances of a club, timing, rosters, club structure, politics, like all of those things play probably a bigger role in a manager's success and the outcome of their time at a club than their ability. Like that's unfair, but that is part of this game. It's part of life. Like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer goes into Manchester United, is not really a success. But we all know that coaching Manchester United is really, really hard because things are chaotic all the time and the squad is not nearly as good as the top teams in the Premier League right now. So he gets on Graham's list a little bit of a bump. I'm sympathetic to Pirlo, so I gave him a little bit of a bump. Thierry Henry's handsome, so I guess Graham gave him a bump for that too. Like, it's really, really hard to gauge these things in any like objective kind of realistic way.
Yeah. And Thierry Henry can also do that eyebrow thing. So
right. And the mouth thing.
Yeah. I've never seen Frank Lampard do those things. So
the mouth thing is when he sort of smiles, Joe, just to clarify. You gave me
the edges of his mouth. Yeah.
Oh, tell us more about the time Thierry Henry did the mouth thing with you.
Thank you, Guy, for that question. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, we're talking about the best non-DP player in MLS history. Back shortly.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow Grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to our listener questions, and this particular one from Peter Shark. Doot, 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 doot. Who is the best non-DP player ever in MLS? Based on those who reach the highest high, even if just for a millisecond, and the best also over a sustained period. There's a part two here who is also the most DP-esque best player from the pre-DP era as well. Joe, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I need clarity on how many DPs Inter Miami have at any given point before I answer this question.
They don't even know. It might depend on who you ask there, Ryan. Technically, they have three right now. Who knows if that'll be the same.
Busquets, Messi, and Suarez, I'm guessing?
No, one of them.
Suarez isn't.
One of them's Gregory at the moment. So yeah, things are spicy right now in Miami. I think there are acceptable answers that do involve Inter Miami. I have an answer that is tied to the Miami Fusion, although that is not ultimately my answer.
Correct.
Taylor, should we say it together?
Do you want to
say it together? The best ever.
Marco Echeverri.
He is absolutely on the top of my list.
And Joe.
Like, forget the era stuff, right? Like, pre or post DP era. Goalkeepers are kind of in their own bucket. I think you can make a really good argument for Matt Turner or Georgi Petrovic, but that's boring. Marco Echeverri is awesome. He was so much fun, and I think he would still be an elite MLS player if he was in his prime today. You see other number 10 creative attacking types who sort of play like him. Yeah, it's a little more structured now. But Echeverri was a wizard with DC United. He was a huge part of them being really the first dynasty in Major League Soccer, winning titles in the 90s after the league had just sort of started. He was the playmaker for them. He was drifting all over the field, making things happen, scoring some goals as well. I had Carlos Valderrama on my list, and that's the other crazy hair, great hair look that was referenced and alluded to at the top of the show. He is second. He was in the league from 98 to the early 2000s, I believe. And was excellent with the Tampa Bay Mutiny and the Miami Fusion. I don't have him above Echeverri, but both super fun players from the early stages of this league and some of the best ever to do it.
A couple things. First of all, Joe, I got so excited to talk about Marco Echeverri. I apologize for not saying it with you at the same time.
No, it's fine. It's fine. But it's hard to coordinate these things.
That's how much I love Marco Echeverri. That ball had eyes. That's one of my favorite commentary.
I knew you were
going to
say that. I literally wrote that down in my notes that you were going to say that, Taylor.
It stands out of my head. It's such a great line because it is exactly how he played. MLS Cup a bunch of times. Supporter Shield, CONCACAF Champions League, Open Cup, Best 11 four times. National Soccer Hall of Fame. He is the best. I love Marco Echeverri so much. Honorable mention to Jaime Moreno as well, who had a lot of those similar accolades, but I would put Echeverri above him. And I had Carlos Valderrama as my number two on the list, Joe, to go to your point. One question about the question itself. Was the idea from Peter that it's like, who is the best non-DP in the DP era? And then who is the best non-DP
It.
Okay.
It's like two separate questions.
Okay, because I did not take it that way. So that's why I have a different answer. So I look forward to Graham's answer as a result.
So I went all over the place with this question because there's two sides to it, and also because maybe I don't have the knowledge base from MLS 1.0. But to address the first part of the question first, in terms of general standing, this might be a boring answer. In terms of general standing in the game, what they've achieved in soccer as a whole, Luis Suarez is surely top of the list if he's not a designated player.
That would be my pick.
Now, he's one of the best players. I know the season hasn't started. He's technically not played a game yet, but he's one of the best players to have ever been signed to an MLS club, and he's not a designated player. And it's a similar story with Jordi Alba. I wouldn't have Jordi Alba on the same. On you go, Taylor.
With Luis Suarez, it's just a rule on the show. I don't know if you got the memo. You have to refer to him as 2024 MLS Golden Boot winner Luis Suarez. We're just getting that out ahead of time for when it happens.
Not just Golden Boot winner, but is he not going to break the all-time single season scoring record?
I think I backed off that one a little bit because I got scared. But yeah,
You don't want to go with that.
I'll go back to it.
Okay.
Did you get scared because you realized he can't run? Is that the problem for you, Taylor?
And Inter Miami have scored like one goal in four preseason games before the start of the season. I think they scored.
We're talking about preseason
now?
Come on. You think this team's showing up in shape? Come on, Graham. Come on.
Yeah. Well, they certainly haven't done that. So, yeah, that's good. That's good for your prediction. Luis Suarez is on my list. I struggled a bit with this question because sometimes you'll get a player who does well, but then gets a DP contract further down the line. So someone like Walker Zimmerman at Nashville, for example. So I sort of use the MVP award as my lineage. Can anyone guess the last MVP not to be a designated player? It doesn't happen very often. I'll be shocked if anyone guesses. What
Jimmy Conrad.
Breck Shea.
You don't have to go that far.
Tony Meola. That's
Breck
right
Shea
too far
feels
back.
Similar kind of era. It's not Breck Shea though. But we're talking like 10 years ago. Anyone know who won MVP in 2013 for the Chicago Fire?
Also not Wando. Wando was my next guess.
Mike McGee.
Oh, Mike McGee.
Wow.
Yeah. So he was the last non-DP.
Joe, you did really well to try to sound excited about that.
Mike McGee.
I remember Mike McGee being like decent and okay for the US and LA Galaxy. Anyway, I guess on the basis of my MVP theory, he's a nominee for me. Wando wasn't a DP for the Quakes when he won the MVP the year before. He got paid the following year, though. He got his DP contract after that. I don't believe Tyler Adams was ever made a DP by the Red Bulls, which isn't too surprising given he wasn't there for long, but he was good enough for them to earn a move to Leipzig. This is recency bias, but Roman Berkey, Joe, correct me if I'm incorrect, I don't think he's a DP for St. Louis City and had a very good season last year. And in terms of the pre-DP role player who should have been a DP, Valderrama's on my list. Obviously a real icon of the 90s. Preki would be up there as well, an icon of the first era of MLS. Meaning Alexi Lalas, surely deserves a mention. I don't know if American fans truly realise the cut-through that Alexi Lalas has as a player. Not so much as a pundit now, because he's not on our TVs over here. But ask people to name a US player from the 90s, and Alexi's name will come up. Or they'll be able to describe him with like the iconic red hair from the 1994 World Cup. So maybe he is a very DP player, pre-DP, if that makes any sense. Kobe Jones would be the other kind of US icon from around that time.
Alexi remains a player that, like, if I talk to the guy, we talked about this in the AFCON show, the guy whose garage I was hanging out in, when I mentioned Alexi, he was like, yeah, I know Alexi Lalas. Like, he does have that sort of crossover.
For Crypto Bros.
I guess you could put him on that list. I also had, in terms of, before the DP era, Lothar Matthäus, even though he does not do well, I think for his playing history, he probably deserves a shout. And Graham, this one feels like a person who would be a DP player now and would sort of be a bigger deal. Would you count Mo Johnston as being on that list, playing for Celtic, playing for Rangers? He does eventually go on to win MLS Cup, but I feel like maybe he deserves a shout as a non-DP player.
So obviously I'm aware Mo Johnston played in America. Is he MLS era? Mo Johnston plays
He won MLS Cup, man.
Wow, he played for Kansas City Wizards. Yep. Wow, that feels weird because Mo Johnston is 60 years old now. That feels like a completely different lifetime. But yeah, Mo Johnston, I guess, you know, one of the most famous Scottish players of all time for some non-footballing reasons. But yeah, he would be up there.
Jumping back to Alexi Lalas, by the way. Sorry, Joe. Just to say that part of the reason for cut-through might be that he was in the 1999 movie Switching Goals with Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen. There is a very amusing clip out there on the socials, if you care to find it, where the characters are comparing him to Pelé very favourably, arguing that he's sort of as good as Pelé, if not better, which is very good.
Not to be harsh with Alexi, but is that a joke or is that a sincere moment?
No, it's sincerely presented in the movie and in which Alexi is participating.
Wow.
It's good.
So that film was not made by soccer people then.
Sounds like we need to do a watch-along of this movie is what I'm hearing.
We do.
That's not what I was thinking after what you just said there, Ryan. I'll admit. I am absolutely not here for you all claiming players who are not good in Major League Soccer as the best DPs in MLS history or the best non-DPs in MLS history. I'm not hopping on board with that particular train. I think if you're looking at players in the DP era, which is 2007 to present, who have been some of the best in the league and have been legendary, truly, with their performances on the field, you're probably tending to look towards more undervalued positions. You don't see designated player fullbacks, really. You don't see designated players in goal, certainly. You don't see designated players often at the base of midfield. I think about someone like Diego Chara, who absolutely belongs in that conversation. Ozzy Alonso as well. Graham, you mentioned Tyler Adams, right? I'm just going for players who were around a bit longer and impacted more teams in more seasons. So my mind sort of drifts there. But there are lots of acceptable players who were good in Major League Soccer who could be answers to this one.
Was Diego Chara never a DP?
I don't I don't know for
his
sure,
brother
but I don't
got to be a DP and he didn't get to be one?
The benefit of being a winger, Taylor. The
is
benefit
that how
of
it
being
works?
A winger.
Wow.
Oh, he was. No, I'm just kidding. I'm wrong about Chara. But you get the idea, right? These sort of scrappy, really impactful base of midfield kind of players. I think there's a number of those that could belong on this list.
Dax McCarty has surely... He's not a DP for Atlanta now, is he, surely?
No.
Career.
And he wasn't for Nashville either, so yeah.
Exactly. So maybe he makes that list.
Wonderful stuff. Joe, for my own peace of mind, is there a resource you can go to which tells you the current DPs of each team?
It's called Wikipedia.
Wikipedia. And it's
is that the
good.
Best we can do?
But yeah, it's really good. It's very
some
helpful.
Some pages don't, okay. though. But you have to go to
there's
like MLS.
There's like a whole league-wide right one that looks at every team on the same Wikipedia page.
Okay. All right, good to know. Thank you very much, and thank you, Peter, for that question. We go now to Ross King, who says, with the news of Italian soccer fans being rightfully banned from stadiums for racism, I've always wondered, says Ross, how are stadium bans enforced? Who is responsible for enforcing them? And how effective are they? Now, Taylor, this answer to this will vary region to region, but the short answer is it's really hard to enforce, and they're not necessarily enforced very strictly, because if you are banned from a stadium, certainly I was about to say my experience, I've not been banned from a stadium, but the way it would work is maybe you can't buy tickets from the club, you can't buy season tickets, but you could in theory be given one. You're not ID'd in most places where you enter into a stadium. The only way you get caught out is if you're recognized, if you get arrested again, or basically security spots you in most scenarios.
Yep.
And the problem with the Italian soccer situation at the moment is there's been this talk of getting facial recognition technology in to identify problematic fans, which is great if they could actually implement it, because most clubs don't own their own stadiums. There's a lot of complications to actually getting that installed, and realistically it's going to be very difficult to do, but it would only really work for identifying problem makers and not necessarily re-identifying banned fans as well. So Taylor, it's complicated, and it's actually surprisingly difficult to enforce.
Yes. Next question. you pretty much answered it. That is what I found as well. And that's why I really enjoyed this question, because it's one that you hear about a stadium ban and you're like, all right, well, that's sorted. And then I never really thought much past it. But yeah, to your point, Ryan, it's pretty hard to enforce. Individual clubs, I think, largely are responsible for enforcing it. To my understanding, if a Premier League club bans you, then you are going to be banned from all of the stadiums in the Premier League. But it is very difficult to actually enforce. You're not using facial recognition, so it's a combination of match day intelligence. Apparently, clubs have intelligence units that are on the ball. I doubt they do. Exactly.
There's no intelligence on the pitch either.
Exactly. There we go. And so then you'll have... like the employees at the turnstiles might have photos of people who aren't allowed in, but that also feels like they're flipping through the
like
thing
a
that
liquor store.
Like a wanted poster in a Western.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So I doubt that's happening as much. It does seem, and then checking the names on tickets, as you said, but you can still find a way through that. To my understanding, the most common way of dealing with it is basically that you issue the supporter in question a no trespassing notice. It's basically a version of a restraining order, and then if they are found to have violated that, the punishment is even more severe, because now you have a legal protection of them entering a facility. They have done it anyway, so now they are guilty of like trespassing at a minimum. And so I think it's the threat of the additional fines, additional charges, that is meant to be a preventative thing to keep people away. But again, if you've got 60, 70, 80,000 people in a stadium, as long as that person isn't making a public scene, I think it's going to be harder for them to attract attention and get thrown out. So it is a thing where you are sort of basically just running the risk of being in violation, but I don't think it's going to be a future police minority reporter out there surfing the crowd trying to find you sort of situation.
Yeah, and I will add on the Italian side of things, I did mention that you don't get ID'd at the majority of games. To their, or I suppose it's to their credit, it is also to their unwavering commitment to bureaucracy. You are ID'd at many Italian stadiums as you go, and you need to go to Olimpico, you need your license, and they cross reference it with your ticket to get in. But I mean, if you were being inventive, I'm sure there are ways around such situations.
McLovin. Sure, and you go.
There we go, Graham, anything to add on this one? I imagine we've covered most of the...
Yeah, we've covered the bulk of it. I found an article from Sky Sports that details how clubs enforce stadium bans, so I'll read a couple sections out of it quickly. There are several methods involved, including intelligence on the ground, cross-referencing on names on tickets. Basically, the thing that we haven't mentioned so far that they go on to detail is basically there's a big old Premier League database of banned fans that's shared between the clubs. And for the most part, it's a collaboration between the clubs, the leagues, and the national associations. Those are the ones that enforce banning orders. And then in certain instances, really only extreme cases, you'd have law enforcement, you'd have the police or courts being brought in. But it's a bit of a collaborative process. It's a bit like playing whack-a-mole and doesn't seem very scientific at all. So agree with everything that's been said.
Yeah, and I suppose in the UK context as well, Graham, the most CCTV'd country in the world, essentially, if you are the sort of person who's being banned from a stadium, they're probably watching you going in and out as well. So, you know, Big Brother's exactly. there. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Joe, have you been banned from a stadium?
Not yet. There's still time.
Okay. Hold out hope for you there.
Has anyone ever been thrown out of a stadium or an event? Graham?
Dumbarton many there times last season, but not through my behavior. Aww. Just because they kept postponing that match.
Okay.
I hope my brother doesn't mind me telling this story, but
yes.
He flew to New York to watch Oasis play at Madison Square Garden and was thrown out before they came on.
Inebriation?
Yep,
that'll do it.
Yeah, wonderful stuff. Anyway, thank you very much, Ross, for that question. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're talking about players we dislike. Back shortly.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to our listener questions. Jory K has been in touch, and who says, Ryan strongly dislikes Chiellini and Werner. Who are some players you guys just dislike, whether for style of play, what they did to your countrymen, or just seem to have the last name Werner? I'd like to clarify something, Jory, at the start of this question. I don't dislike Timo Werner. I think he's like you watch like some of the videos he's done on YouTube and stuff. He's actually very funny. He seems like a really nice guy. I just don't think he's very good at soccer. Whereas Giorgio Chiellini, don't like that guy. I'll happily admit that.
Guys, we still got to get that cameo for Chiellini to Ryan for his next birthday.
Let's not do that. If you're listening, Giorgio, don't waste your time with that. I will say, Graham, my sense of justice in the world bends toward players who I feel commit injustice on the field. So it's Giorgio Chiellini, and probably the other candidate I'd say for players I don't like is someone like Luis Suarez. Someone who I feel actively cheats in the game is someone who I don't appreciate. So you know, there's some players where it's like the win at all costs, like we've seen from Luis Suarez, not just with the biting, but with the handball on the line and all that. I've got no time for that. So those are the ones I strongly dislike, I would say.
Okay, so I drew the lines at kind of football reasons, which there's a grey area with what you're saying there, Ryan, and I accept that, and obviously not a fan of cheating in sport either. I guess I could draw many players in that I dislike for non-football reasons, but that feels like that could get quite dark quite quickly. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to focus on players that I just don't like really in a football sense. Eric Garcia might be top of my list. I wouldn't say I necessarily dislike him, but he certainly confuses me. I think he's a player with flaws in a number of different ways, and so the career that he has had is confusing to me. He's played for Man City and then Barcelona, and he was a first team for Spain, and I just didn't really get it. To be fair, he's now been shipped out on loan to Girona, who are now top of the league in Spain, so what do I know? Maybe
sounds like you're the problem, Graham.
It does sound like I'm the problem, actually. The facts are piling up against me. Another player I just don't understand is Axel Witsel. what is he meant to be good at? He's not someone who dictates possession, or he doesn't do it very well. He's not a box crasher. He's now playing as a centre back for Atletico Madrid, but I wouldn't say that's a natural fit for him either. So similar to Garcia, not that I dislike him, I don't really understand the career he's had. Two players that I do kind of dislike for Scotland, Chris Martin, not that one, another Chris Martin, although I'm not a big fan of that one either. But Gordon Strachan inexplicably favoured Chris Martin over Lee Griffiths for a long while, despite the fact Chris Martin was a big lump who couldn't hold the ball up, was slow, didn't score many goals, didn't seem to be very interested in playing for Scotland. So that's a common one for Scotland fans. Ollie McBurney makes the list as well. So he was caught on video one time saying to his Sheffield United teammates, "Oh, I'm having to go up to Scotland. Yeah, no, I wish I didn't have to do it." He's never been called up again, and we qualified for back-to-back Euros. So we're doing okay without you, Ollie McBurney. And finally, Gareth Bale, not for Real Madrid, just for Wales. For starters, I'm still bitter about Wales making the Euro 2016 semi-finals on the back of Bale being one of the best in the world at the time. It is unfair that Wales, a country that likes rugby more than football, has had not one, but two elite-level wingers in back-to-back generations. I'm very bitter about it, and Bale always scored against Scotland. He ended one qualification campaign for us. He got Wales to the last World Cup when we were definitely better than Wales. For Real Madrid, seemed like a cool guy, but for Wales, he can, he can get in the sea.
Wow. Tell us how you really feel, Graham. Amazing. Good stuff. Joe, any players you were willing to put on reprimand here that you dislike?
Yeah, I don't feel super passionate about a lot of players, I think, in the way that Ryan, you do, especially when it comes to Giorgio Chiellini. I do have a few nominations. Guillermo Ochoa is on the list, just because it feels like he is frustratingly effective for Mexico in the moments where maybe some of us would prefer that he wouldn't be, and so that does quite irk me. Diego Lainez as well has just sort of always rubbed me the wrong way for Mexico. I think still is a super talented player. I like what he brings on the wing in a lot of moments, but I don't love that. Dixon Arroyo is a name that I'm guessing no one on this show knows except for me, was part of Inter Miami's team last year. And I just got so frustrated watching him for Miami because it felt like every time the ball would touch his foot, Miami lost possession, and then you'd see them miss out on opportunities to give the ball to Messi and Busquets and Alba and their actual good technical soccer players. And so he just stood out like a sore thumb to me and quickly became my least favorite player in that entire squad. There are some players that I dislike the hype around them, but like, I don't know, Ryan, you kind of got names to some of the distinctions earlier.
Name names.
Brendan Aaronson. I've never understood it with Brendan Aaronson. I certainly don't understand it now, and I think everybody has sort of caught up on some of that stuff, given that he's not playing in the Bundesliga right now. But it's nothing against Brendan Aaronson as a person or anything along those lines.
It's Gio Reyna, but not if it's Brendan Aaronson. Just want to be clear there on the not playing.
Taylor,
front.
The difference is Gio Reyna is good at soccer, and Brendan Aaronson is not very good at soccer. That's how I would sort of draw the line between those two things.
All right, Taylor. What are you feeling?
I kind of wish Joe had just like against character come out and been like, here are the people I hate. And then it was like a 26 player list. Unfortunately, it wasn't.
Ryan Bailey, yeah. Graham Ruthven, oh. Taylor Rockwell.
Yeah. In that order, I'll take that. In terms of, in thinking about this, I think there was a period of time in my fandom when I like definitely had players I didn't like. Like, I did not like John Terry. I did not like Frank Lampard. I really did not like Javier Mascherano or Steven Gerrard. But I think that was all like fandom bias. I have less of that these days. I think on-field stuff, two that annoy me, Mesut Ozil and Eden Hazard in recent memory. It players that like clearly just didn't really want to do it, didn't really care, kind of wanted to do their own thing. I don't really love Mesut Ozil's politics either, but that's beside the point. So I think any player that just feels sort of like they're not really pushing themselves, they're not really trying, when it becomes that public, it's going to frustrate me. I will forever have negative feelings towards Nigel de Jong and to a lesser extent Johnny Evans for basically ruining Stu Holden's career. He has scars on his knee that he has named after the players because they are responsible for his respective knee injuries.
Is Johnny Evans responsible for one of those injuries?
Yes, he's playing for Northern Ireland.
He seems like such a nice guy.
Maybe that was playing for Man United, I think, in a cup game potentially. But yeah, no, I mean, and it wasn't like a vicious one. It was just like went in hard and ruined his knee. A maybe more controversial one. I've never been that big of a Zlatan fan, even though he played for Manchester United.
Oh, yeah, he's on my list.
He's good, don't get me wrong, but the amount of hype he gets and has continued to get is where I sort of draw the line. Like, I think he has had moments of incredible athleticism and ability. I think also he's had spectacular falling outs and seems to be kind of a prima donna of sorts. So he's not my favorite. And along those lines, Marcus Rashford is moving into that territory. I feel like for the way he plays, it's a lot of head down. It's a lot of shooting when he shouldn't be shooting. It's a lot of individual dribbling and then some of the off-field stuff more recently. I don't strongly dislike him, but I am definitely not his biggest fan these days.
Just going back to Zlatan, Taylor, it's the whole Chuck Norris
stick
from Zlatan that has turned me off. I'm like, dude, you're 42 years old. You've got four children. Behave like it. Like, it's so tiring. It's going on too long.
Graham, that is well said. Because even Chuck Norris will sort of like lean into the Chuck Norris jokes and he'll make them about himself. But you always get the impression, and again, he is not my favorite person, but I do get the impression that he is sort of doing it like, huh, this is kind of a funny thing that people are doing. Whereas Zlatan seems to be like, yes, this is an accurate depiction. This is who I am. The earth does tremble before me. The waters do part for me. Like, it just that level of arrogance, which I'm sure is a little bit of a character, more so than who he actually is. But I will say that the one time I was at a game that he was at was the MLS All-Star game, where he played what he was contractually obligated to play, subbed off and immediately left and did not stick around for anything, did not want to be involved in anything, wanted no part of anything having to do with any sort of MLS celebration.
Wow, fair enough. All right, just to reiterate, my dislike players are due to my honor code, whatever it is, and for cheating incidents on the field. That's why Chiellini's there, that's why Luis Suarez is there.
Sorry, when did Chiellini cheat on the field, Ryan? What was that situation?
Don't want to talk about it.
I mean, and also Suarez just, like, he was correctly punished for a handball. Like, I get what you mean. The fact that no one has mentioned racism with Luis Suarez is probably the major mark against him. But then also, yes, the biting as well.
He's Messi's friend, Taylor. It's fine. Wait, everything's cool. There's no issues there with Luis Suarez. No.
It does beg the question, though, Ryan. When Suarez bit Chiellini, who are you pulling for there?
Chiellini wasn't on my poop list at that point, Taylor. Okay. He hadn't cheated on the field at that point. He was fine.
Again, Chiellini did not cheat on the field, listeners, just for all those who are out there, to make that clear.
Joe's made my list.
Yes, Joe.
By the way, there's another Joe. I'll add, for non-cheating reasons, there's another Joe I'll add onto my list, Joey Barton, just because he's the worst.
There's all sorts of that category that I didn't. I think Graham was sort of with me on that, like, didn't end up getting included. Ronaldo would absolutely be at the top of any of these discussions for me at the moment. There's there's a lot of those, but I was trying to steer towards the soccer side a little bit.
I strayed away from that kind of category. Ryan, I was convinced you were just going to read out the full MK Dons starting lineup. Joseph Tomlinson,
traitor,
Alex Gibley,
traitor,
Max Dean.
Traitor.
Just go through 11 players.
That would imply I acknowledge their existence, Graham.
Joe mentioned Ochoa and Diego Lainez, and I think that's a really interesting one because I went through the whole Mexico team, and it really just remains Rafa Márquez. I still do not like Rafa Márquez. I think he was the most inclined to be a dirty player when the situation allowed for it. And just those moments of little punches, little kicks, little hits, they annoy me more than anything else. I have a begrudging respect for a lot of the current Mexico team, including Guillermo Ochoa. And I wanted to put somebody from Canada on the list, but that feels like kicking them when they're down. So not yet Canada, but maybe one day.
No one dislikes Canadians, Taylor. What are you talking about, man? Come on.
Mike Myers? Mike Myers.
Okay, I liked Wayne's World. Let's move on. Jory K, thank you very much for your question. Brian Avery has one here, our final one of this episode. What is something a player or manager once said at a press event, post-match or otherwise, that still makes you laugh whenever you remember it? Joe's already laughing just thinking of his nominees here. Joe, what you got?
So the top answer on my list is not a verbal thing, so I know it doesn't answer Brian's question. Maybe my favorite press moment of all time is Vampire J-Wow Cancelo. I cannot stop thinking about this moment since it happened. It was that earlier this year, right? It was after he scored a winner against Celta Vigo in La Liga. He comes out and just watch the video, folks. I know this is not the most helpful thing to do on a audio medium. You will not regret spending 12 seconds of your life doing this. J-Wow Cancelo, Ryan's trying to do it right now for all of us. He just turns into a vampire. His eyes get so wide. It's so funny. I love that clip more than I love most things involved with this sport. I also like Pep Guardiola calling Kyle Walker a dum-dum in basically those words. That's towards the top of my list as well, but nothing, and I mean nothing, will top J-Wow Cancelo.
Wow. Yeah. Graham, what you got?
Okay, so Leuven Hall produced a few press conference gems during his time at Man United. But my favourite one, yeah, that was a good one. But my favourite one, along similar lines, was when he said he wanted his players to be more, quote, horny. Yep. And Juan Mata was sitting next to him, couldn't stop himself laughing, and Van Gaal sort of checked with Mata. Am I using the right word? I think the word he was looking for was passion, but it got lost in translation a little bit, and I'll always remember that one. And then, has anyone seen Wayne Rooney talking about training with the Everton senior squad for the first time in his career? Has anyone seen that clip?
No.
So I will, I'll put it in the Discord and I'll send it to you guys. But it was on like an Everton fans YouTube channel or something a few years ago, fairly recently, like 2 or 3 years ago. But he's talking about breaking through. And keep in mind that he's an Everton, boyhood Everton fan. He's talking about playing with his heroes. And it's just funny how quickly the story changes. It doesn't go in the way that you expect it. So this is the quote. "It's mad how quickly it changed for me. For me to go in with Duncan Ferguson, Alan Stubbs, all of them who I grew up watching, to then go and play with them, train with them every day. So quickly I remember thinking, these guys are crap," which is just the ending of that story. The thing is, compared to Rooney, they were crap, all those players. But it just doesn't go the way that you expect it. But yeah, it's that was in the mind.
It's the Good Will Hunting scene when he's like yelling at the teacher, "Do you know how easy this is for me?" Yeah, it's similar vibes there. That's a good one. I have two from Alex Ferguson. The first one, "When an Italian tells me it's pasta on the plate, I check out of the sauce to make sure," which is a quote that I like always thought was funny but never fully got until I realized that he is speaking specifically about mind games and how Italian managers are masters of the mind games. So it's not like Italians cheat or Italians are always complaining. It's more so that he had been dealing with so many mind games ahead of the knockout round against, I believe, Juve. That's what he was going with. Similarly, after losing to Barcelona, I think in 2011 in the Champions League final, a reporter stands up. Which, Ryan, did you annoy Sir Alex Ferguson at one point? I know I did.
No.
Okay, who did you annoy? Which manager did you
annoy? Oh, how long you got?
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, I just there was the voice that asked this was somewhat familiar. And for a moment, I was like, oh, God, is this Ryan asking this question? But it was not. So that's good. The question was, "Sir Alex, if the owners of Manchester United gave you a blank check to sign anyone from that Barcelona team tonight, who would it be?" And the obvious goal there was for him to say Messi. So that, number one, they can write stories about how Sir Alex Ferguson loves Messi, but also so that then they could distort that into a Sir Alex Ferguson issues, get me Messi or we can't win demand or something like that. And he looks at the reporter for like long enough for it to get quiet and uncomfortable. And he says, "That's one of the stupidest questions I've ever heard. Mascherano." And then everyone laughs because he doesn't give him the answer he wanted. And then as everyone laughs, he's still smiling, stares directly at the guy and says, "You're testing my patience." And he says it in such a like friendly but scathing and I want to fight you outside sort of way that it just makes me laugh for how much he handled the question, handled the nuances of what was being asked, still produced a funny answer, and was threatening all at once. It's a consummate performance from that manager that makes me chuckle.
He's the master. Very well done. I'm glad you thought that might have been me, Taylor, but it wasn't. my favorite of the Alex Ferguson genre is Real Madrid, "I wouldn't sell them a virus."
Yeah.
A couple of weeks later, Ronaldo, record transfer to Real Madrid.
It's also, even before then, did Manchester United not sell Ruud van Nistelrooy to Real Madrid? Like, there was a bit of traffic between the
Beckham
two.
I mean, as well. And,
if you want to go way back, like I believe I'm correct in saying that Real Madrid loaned Manchester United many, many players after the Munich air disaster so that they could still basically play a team. And since then, there has been a historic connection and, if anything, friendship between Real Madrid and Manchester United. Yeah. So maybe that was just Fergie in his feelings on the day.
Maybe so. A couple of nominations from me. Both are a bit sweary, so I'll censor them as much as possible. The classic of the genre of a press conference for me is Newcastle United, Joe Kinnear, in October 2008. Joe, if this is beyond your remit of responsibility of looking at press conference events, he said the C-bomb and the F-bomb a total of 52 times. I think it was Simon Bird, the Mirror journalist. He says, "Are you Simon Bird?" "Yes, I am. You're a C-word." And then he just keeps goes on and on and on at this guy about something he had written. And just every other word is a swear word. And it's this sort of quiet fury that Joe Kinnear continues with that gets less and less quiet as he goes on. It's great. It's very, very entertaining indeed.
The quiet rage is really a wonderful aspect of a manager. You do sort of need that, I think, both to motivate the squad and also to keep those journalists in line.
Yeah, indeed. The other one, slightly an equally annoyed manager, but a slightly funnier clip. I'll count this as a press event. He was being interviewed on TV. Harry Redknapp at Portsmouth training. I think maybe we've seen the clip where he gets hit by a ball in the back of the head while he's talking to the camera. And he tries to continue the interview and answer the interviewer's questions, but he can't shake this rage that's building that someone's hit him with the ball. He keeps like, who was that? He turns around, he finds out who it was. No wonder he's in the effing reserves. And like, just keeps, he keeps interrupting his own answer to turn back and shout at this player who's kicked the ball at him. It is very, very good television indeed. So those are my two nominees.
I remember that one, Ryan, the red. I remember both of those, actually. One further nomination from me. It's just a direct quote from David Beckham. I definitely want Brooklyn to be christened, but I don't know into what religion yet. Mm-hmm. Classic. Classic David Beckham.
Nice. That's like the French don't have a word for entrepreneur levels of quotations there. Very good indeed. All right,
that's
Brian.
A new one for me. I love that.
That was GW, right? Wasn't it? I believe Mr. Bush said that at some point. Maybe I'm wrong.
Wow. I'm just shocked no Jack Grealish moments made it onto any of our nominees. But
oh, bless him. Bless him indeed. Thank you very much, Brian, for that question. Let us know if there are any other player or manager press events that make you laugh in the Patreon, patreon.com/totalsoccershow. But for now, Taylor Rockwell, thank you very much for listener questioning with us.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you very much, Graham Ruthven.
Thank you, Ryan Bailey.
Thank you very much, Joe Lowry.
Thanks, Ryan.
And listener, thank you the most is for joining us on the feed. We'll be back very shortly, but for now, bye!